You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, we've been talking a lot about the draft because next Monday is a very important day for the D-backs, and one important person in the D-backs organization is special assistant to the general manager, Tim Wilkin. Tim oversaw drafts for nearly 20 years, 19 out of 20 first-rounders making it to the big leagues in one stretch, a really incredible run. And Tim, first and foremost, I'm curious, what's been the biggest change over the draft in the last 30 years?
Well, probably the analytics and meshing that in with the actual scouting. Mike Hazen has said here that he wants scouts to be scouts and analytics people to be analytics, and we can do the meshing from there. But probably incorporating that. The other thing with the media and all the avenues with all the prognosticators, blah, 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 that's kind of – the stories of guys popping later in the draft are becoming less and less frequent because clubs are more and more thorough with trying to cover the whole map, so to say.
I'm curious. I want to go back to the analytics because people hear that and I think they instantly think stats, and they don't necessarily know what it entails. But what are some examples of things that maybe you look at now, or that you, maybe in some of the previous organizations you worked with, you started to look at that would give a little bit of color to what analytics means?
Well, I think the blending of, I guess you would say, extra base hits with the ISO, and that's one of my biggest go-tos now. But
even the objective data collection has changed a little bit, right, with technology. Yeah. So you have different things that beyond just the radar gun or the stopwatch that has to have changed, if not the evaluation process, at least the information that comes into the room.
Well, we'll say, like, everything is, like, next day. If Joe Blow from Oklahoma State goes 4 for 5, those stats and everything have been updated. Where you might have said in the past, and say 20, 25 years ago, well, Joe Blow was hitting 300 when I saw him in March, and he goes through a slump, and he's 270 at the end of the year, and you didn't really have that access to find that out. And I think myself and a lot of people are much more cognizant of what it is up to date. I mean, you don't always have to see a guy. Yeah, it's hard to trust something if you don't see it personally, but you have to be more giving.
What's so interesting to me, as I mentioned before, you went through 19 of 20 drafts where a first rounder made it to the big leagues, and that was in an era when that was very, very difficult to do. What's the key in your mind to finding that big leaguer in the first round? What is part of that secret sauce?
Well, you know, I have to say I was very blessed, especially over in Toronto, with a tremendous scouting staff, guys that went on to be scouting directors, special assistants, and many other titles, national cross-checkers, the guys that were area guys. And we had really good area guys at the time. They helped with the makeup part. And I don't think we missed a lot on the makeup part. We might have missed on a few players, but I think we were bringing in pretty good quality people to go along with their abilities.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit to Derek Ladner about that last week, and makeup being so important in that it's not just you being a good person off the field, right? It's work ethic. It's such a catch-all term, but that's not always something that's easy to see.
No, it's not easy to see. Sometimes it's masked. Mm-hmm. And I think our people were good at uncovering that, you know, was there genuineness to their interviews or their talks with those players? So it's almost art form, and I think our guys had it. We had some good guys over at Tampa when I was there and naturally with the Cubs, but it's been a lot of fun. And thanks to those guys because, you know, they hit on the makeups because we don't always get to meet with all the players.
Right. Let's touch a little bit. Before we started talking, you reminded me of Matt Caesar, who's in AAA, was one of the guys that you drafted. He was a two-sport guy. And if you look through your draft history, you loved two-sport players. There aren't that many of them anymore. Baseball has changed in that it's kind of a year-round sport, especially for players at a higher level. Mm-hmm. How does that change the evaluation process?
Well, back then, I mean, people talked about playing different sports because it helps you compete in different manners. Today, you got to wonder, you know, they're only playing one sport and they only know one way. So hopefully it's more of an instinctive type of baseball player, because as you can see through the years, that the actual playing of the game, I think, is a little bit on a downside of where it used to be. There's better talent today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not even close, I don't think. But there was many more baseball players that knew how to play the game because they had learned through other sports to compete in different manners. So, I mean, there's some quiz questions thrown out in every game to baseball players. Some can handle it, others can't, and and normally the ones that can become some of the better players.
You know, that's so interesting that it's other sports that help the X's and O's of baseball. Mm-hmm. And is it – why do you think that is?
Well, it's just – you've just got to do things differently. I mean, you, more of it's, I think, somewhat ad lib. Mm-hmm. And today, as you mentioned earlier, this is a year-round sport. So – more of it's structured, more of it's mechanical, and no one talks about ad-libbing and changing direction. And I think that's really key for frontline baseball players. I mean, you see that in Javi Baez, and he's probably one of the better ad-lib players in baseball, and he's reactive. So, I mean, I don't know if he played two sports or not, but he's certainly a prime example of being – the ad-lib player.
Yeah, well, and he's had a turf career. You were the scouting director of the Cubs when you guys took Baez. What was it? What was that process like going into that draft?
Oh, man, that was quite the year. I kind of titled that year as shooting fish in a barrel because the first round was so good.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was a lot of talk about Lindor and Baez, and they had a big game that they played against each other that spring, but in our room, I was going to take Baez over Lindor no matter what, but there were scenarios that was saying that Lindor and Baez might go before our pick. So Lindor was our second choice. If both of them had been selected, Jose Fernandez was our third choice.
Oh, wow.
And then if Jose Fernandez was taken, C.J. Krohn was our next choice. So it was, like I said, shooting fish in a barrel. It was just so good, you almost couldn't make a bad choice that year. It was such a good draft.
That's incredible. And obviously C.J.'s brother, Kevin, now up with the D-backs.
Yeah.
Wilk, this is a special summer for you in that the late Roy Halladay is being inducted in Cooperstown. What do you remember about Roy when he was an amateur?
Well, I went to see him. He's from Arvada in Colorado. It was a high school rivalry game, so it was kind of chippy. But prior to the game, flying in was really interesting because it might have been the worst plane flight I ever had in my life at the brand-new Denver airport at the time.
Oh, okay.
So the night before, I was in Long Beach, and you couldn't find – the Weather Channel that much. That was 1995. So the Weather Channel was starting to make its inroads. So I go into a bar restaurant and flip the bartender a $5 bill, and I say, could you put the Weather Channel on? And people started yelling in the background. Well, I see a big H around Colorado, and I says, well, good. We got a good chance to play the game, but there's a lot of circles around this H. And as we get in, the plane was just, oh, man, he really scuffled to land the plane. And I found out later on, being the amateur weatherman that I am, that all those things are called isobars, and that means you're going to have a pretty rough flight. But my story paled in comparison to the next 15 scouts I saw that came in. One guy, they said they had to circle three times that they couldn't land it. It was so windy. So that was prior to the game. But anyways, there was about 40, 50-mile-an-hour winds during the game. Roy was pitching against the wind. He was like 91, 95, ultra-competitive. You could see it. His poise level really drew to me, and his athleticism, and you could see he was going to be a big man and a strong man. And prior to that year, we had a scout named Buzz Campbell, mm-hmm. part-time guy. He was Roy's mentor. Buzz has since passed away, but Buzz recommended to Roy that he do cross-country. Roy finished third in the state in cross country his senior wow. year, and it shows you his stamina, all those complete games when no one was completing games, and that also showed out as well. So, yeah, he had the knuckle curve, just like I said, he had a lot of poise, and I had him second on my list that year. And the only guy I had ahead of him was Ariel Prieto, who was the Cuban defector that they inserted in the draft. And he basically was going to go to the big leagues, which he did with Oakland. But I had that, and a good friend of mine that's now with the Kansas City Royals was the scouting director for the Phillies, Mike Arbuckle, and he told me a story. And as we were picking, I believe, 19 that year, and that was when the American League and National League had odd and even numbers.
Right.
We were odd number, and the National League were even numbers. And at pick number 8 was the Pirates, and they were so close to the vest, you couldn't get anything out of them. The speculation on who they're going to take, no one has an idea. So the Phillies really wanted Reggie Taylor. He was their top priority. But everyone kind of thought that maybe Pittsburgh was going to take him. But they changed their mind and took Hermanson, the outfielder from Vegas. That made Reggie get the 12. But if Reggie had been selected, Roy Halladay was going to be taken by the Phillies. And 7 picks later, we get Roy. So it was when he told me that story, I went, whew. So, it was quite the process. It wasn't a very good draft that year. It was a very thin draft. If you look at the history of the 1995 draft, it was not a good draft. So we were very fortunate that Roy did fall, because there weren't that kind of quality drafts after that. So,
yeah, that's incredible.
Do you still love it as much as you used to?
Oh, yeah. This time of year, and it's been quite the lengthy year, simply because we're, as a unit, on the road a lot because of all the picks. And I'm really looking forward to what's going to transpire here in the next 4 days prior to the draft and then on through the draft. So I think this can be something that really gives your franchise stability if we can hit pretty strongly in a few of these players. And hopefully it'll give us a lot of depth down the road to either have these players play for us or in future acquisitions and deals.
I just want to hit on that one point before I let you go, in that the idea is, I think people look at it from the outside, and if you don't hit on all 7 picks, it's, well, you know, where did they make mistakes? Mm-hmm. But what's a reasonable probability in your mind on hitting on players in that? I talked a little bit about this with Derek last week, because it's not, you know, the draft in any sport is an imperfect science. It's just more under the covers in baseball because you don't see these players at the major league level right away.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would hope that we could get 2 everyday players. I would hope that we could get a starting pitcher and maybe a couple other supplements out of that. So, You know, in an ideal world, hit on all of them. But that's probably not going to happen. But anyways, hopefully 2 everyday players, starting pitcher, and then a couple other guys that could be used in deals somewhere down the road.
It's a really, really exciting draft for you guys. Well, I really appreciate the time. It is so great to see you. Always great to see you.
Likewise, Mike.
Tim Wilkin joining us on the BP Show, Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.